Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Much better than my first try. Today is Monday, July 8th, 2013, and you are listening right now, right here, to episode 58. 58. My name, I think you probably already know, but just in case you're new here, welcome. My name is Rob. Pleasure to meet you. I'm joined in the studio here, as I am just about every episode. In fact, on every single episode of the show so far, I've been joined by Mr. Jason Slingerland.
That's right.
Yeah,
here he is. On our IMDb page, it says Jason Slingerland, 58 episodes.
Yeah.
Kidding, it doesn't say that. Because
do we have an IMDb page for our podcast?
We're not a movie or a video game.
There are video games on IMDb?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I like movies.
Isn't it called the Internet Movie Database?
Yeah.
But there's video games.
Yeah.
Not just video game movies?
Yeah. There's both.
Really?
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be the IVDB?
The thing is, there are so many actors that have done voiceover work in video games that there's crossover, so that's why.
Oh. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Besides, there's work of some movie makers that I would not call movies either, so.
Well, yeah. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. I got back semi-recently from Origins.
Yeah, this is the first time that you and I have had a chance to sit down and talk, just two of us here, about your trip.
Yeah, it was a good time. I got to spend a good deal of time with Greg from Hat Trick Games. We spent a lot of time locked in a room rehashing the rules to Gunslinging Ramblers.
Excellent. Sounds like fun.
It was great, man. And we you know, there's something to be said about being able to sit down with each other and do that. We've traded tons and tons of emails. We've had lots of phone calls. And I'll tell you, in the time that we sat there and worked through it, you make so much progress in person.
Yeah.
It was cool because we actually laid out what the table would look like if you were playing. Like, here's how many things you would have in front of you, and this is how, just to kind of get a feel for, is this too busy, you know?
Sure.
What I mean?
Yeah.
And it's cool. I'm really, really happy with the progress.
Great.
I have most of a prototype. I need to make a couple tweaks to it. Uh-huh. And then hopefully we'll be playing that. I'm sure if you find us at Gen Con, we'd love to sit down some nights when we're hanging out and run through a game of it with some people. I know Rob's been dying to play it again.
To play it. I haven't played it since about this time last year.
Yeah, yeah. We've just both been so busy with stuff and
Out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control.
So we're just trying to get focused on getting everything ready for Gen Con, you know, getting the prototypes. By the time you're hearing this, I very well should have ordered my prototype.
I hope so.
From GameCrafter of Sandbox Showdown.
I still have to order one of Rocket Wreckers.
Well, you do, but by the time people hear this, you should have ordered it.
I hope so.
If
I hope
you
that
want
I have
to get it.
I hope that I have, yeah.
So, what's their turn time usually?
Well, when I ordered that Frankenstein's Legacy copy, I think it took a couple weeks for them to send it, and then, you know, another 3 or 4 days for it to arrive. I think they estimated 15 days.
And you got it within that window.
Yeah, I had it in my hands within that window. Yeah.
By the time I should have ordered it, I should still have 30+ days.
Yeah.
Before Gen Con. So.
And I think also the bigger the project, the longer it's going to take them to, because obviously Frankenstein had a lot of components, a lot of pieces.
Good point. Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's 80 tiles for there's 80 tiles
For Sandbox Showdown.
Which I just realized, I totally almost ordered 40 tiles.
Whoops.
Let's hope that I did that right when I did it. Mental note, Jason. Let's hope that you did that right. When you listen to this show, oh, yeah, I've already done it. Oh, man. I hope I didn't screw that up.
Write it on your arm or your hand or something.
I'm sure I'll remember now that we've brought that to light.
Yeah.
And the reason is because there's 40 unique tiles, but there's two of every tile.
Two of each. Okay.
So, yeah, that's been interesting trying to get the Photoshop stuff down, because I've been doing that myself for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's not true. I did it for Ramblers, but...
That was a year ago.
You helped me set it up, and then literally with Ramblers, it was a copy-paste process every single time. Sandbox is not like that.
Not that at all.
Not even close.
Yeah.
So Origins, though, was great.
Mm-hmm.
I played some awesome games at Origins.
Yeah, what did you play? What you been playing, Jason?
Hey. Well, most notably, I got to play King of Tokyo. I'd never played King of Tokyo before, and Greg from Hat Trick, he was off doing something else, and he's like, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. He said, they're demoing King of Tokyo over there. He said, go play King of Tokyo. Mm-hmm. See how a good game's made.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a game that's so simple. Like, I mean, it takes no time to learn it. And so, you know, we said I'm gonna play King of Tokyo. Basically, King of Tokyo, you're like a Godzilla style monster trying to destroy Tokyo and destroy the other monsters.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of you want to hold the city as long as you can to get as many points as you can.
So there's a mechanic in it where when you're in if you're not in Tokyo and someone else is in Tokyo and I attack when I'm not in Tokyo, I can only do damage to the person in Tokyo. But if you're in Tokyo, you do damage to everyone every time you do damage.
Yeah.
So an issue with that with two players is, as you know, because you don't own the game for this reason, you said.
For this specific reason.
Which you told me after I bought it, because I was like, I just bought King of Tokyo! And they were like, here's my concern about two players.
Yeah.
Which is that, basically, you can always attack each other, because one of you is always in Tokyo, and one of you is not. The person who's not is attacking the person in, and the person who's in is attacking everybody, which is just you.
Right.
So my wife and I played it, and we tried something different. First game of this, we house ruled it. and it worked really, really well.
Okay.
We each had two monsters.
Oh, okay.
So when you're in Tokyo, you're doing damage to all the monsters, including your own. But it allowed you to kind of min-max a little. Like, this is my one monster. He's dying, but I'm going to keep him in Tokyo for as long as possible to keep stuff out. And I ended up... She beat me. Barely. It was a very, very close game. Mm-hmm. So... It worked really well that way.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Yeah, because Christine and I play tested it at Gen Con last year, and we had a lot of fun. We were playing with four people, and it was a super fun game. But sitting there looking at it and thinking, well, if we and I think I asked the guy demoing, I said, how does a two player game work? He said, oh, it's just the same way, just two people instead of four. And it occurred to me, oh, well, then what's the, you know, where's the jeopardy in that, you know? So, where's the strategy on who do you attack at any given time or whatever? Right. So, yeah, so that concerned me. And that's why we didn't buy it at Gen Con last year, because we really were only going to buy games last year that were really good for two players.
Right.
So
I'd like to get together with you guys and play it.
Oh, yeah, we would love that, too.
How about you? You been playing anything fun?
The day job has been taking up almost all of my free time lately. I've been working a lot of overtime, a lot of weekends. Just this past Sunday, as a matter of fact, I was having a very frustrating day at the office, and I said, it's enough of that. I just need a break. And so I came home, and it was a really hot day, and we only have air conditioning in two rooms of our house. One of them is our bedroom, and the other one is the office where we are right now.
Yep.
And of course, the air conditioner is off because we're recording, but I was like, oh man, I really want to play a video game. But it's really hot downstairs. So I'm just going to go up to the computer in the office and turn on the air conditioner and just, I don't even care. And so I went on Steam and I downloaded this game called Unepic. It was $8, really cheap. It's a Metroidvania style game. I don't know if you know what that means.
Metroid/Castlevania?
Yeah. Right. Okay. The idea of the game is that it's a side scroller platformer kind of game.
And you like power up as you go.
Yeah, you level up. You know, it's like an RPG where you can increase stats and things,
get new abilities.
Right, but a key component of it is you're not just, you know, in Mario, you're always going from left to right and you can't go back.
Right.
Right.
Because like in Metroid, you get new powers and that allows you to unlock new areas already been in.
And so you can keep going anywhere on the map anytime you want. And that's how this game is structured. You can go anywhere in the map in this evil castle anytime you want. And you're fighting little beasts and monsters and things and you're collecting treasure and you're buying upgrades. And the game starts, I think it was made in Spain by just a couple guys in Spain. And then translated by some guys in Europe. And the game is front-loaded with a lot of really, really awful video game references and jokes. Like, the first half an hour of the game, they're referencing Metal Gear and Castlevania and, you know, a whole bunch of pop culture crap, and it's kind of annoying.
Okay.
But once you get past that, it's super, super fun.
Cool.
It's just a simple kind of down-to-basics, great platformer, hack-and-slash adventure, a Metroidvania style thing. Nice. Super fun, lots of little collectibles, lots of little simple goals and simple small quests that you can get. I played the crap. I think I played it for like 4 hours on Sunday and I played it for another 2 hours last night when I should have been in bed. You know, I got home from work at 8:30 and I'm like, oh, I should go to bed, but I just want to play Unepic. Nice. Yeah, so I really like it a lot. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
Cool.
Unepic. $8. Can't beat it. $8.
Can't.
Yeah. So that's all I've been doing.
All right.
Yeah. You have some news for us, though, right?
I do. Do you want me to talk about that now?
Might as well.
Okay, so assuming everything has went as planned and nothing has happened that was bad, and Rob didn't cut this out of the show.
Right. Never. I don't cut anything.
Today being Monday, July 8th, the Kickstarter for Water Balloon Washout is now live.
Woo!
As long as it's after noon EST, because that's when it's going live, is noon EST. So if you're listening to this before then, just wait. The game's out there. We ended up bumping the goal a little more than we originally had. It ended up being necessary. We redid some pricing on some stuff and realized, just to be safe, we're going to ask for a little more. So we're going to...
Sure.
$7,000 is the goal.
Okay, 7,000.
Which is still not a ton. It's under 10. Makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's over 5, but it's under 10. So, and $15 a copy, which is...
Great. Good news.
It's super cheap. It's a 90-card deck. It's super fun to play. It's light strategy. It plays real quick. But it's a good game. You know, it's a lot of fun. Had nothing but great reviews on it. And I appreciate everybody that's been playtesting it for me. So it's going to be up there for a while. I suggest you go back it. Now, if you've got a bigger group of people you like to play with, you want to play, you want to try something different, get 2 copies of it. I know, I'm just trying to sell you an extra copy, but no, it's actually really fun with 8 people. It scales as high as you want it to go. But it with 8 people, it's verified as fun. I think somebody playtested with me with 10. And they said it was still pretty great with 10. So there's a couple slight alterations to the rules for that version.
Mm-hmm.
Just that you can only hit the people to the left and right of you. Otherwise, you know, the first person just gets destroyed before it's even their turn. So this kind of, and then as it collapses in, you get more reach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when the guy to the right of you is knocked out, then the next guy is out. You know, one of the things people were concerned about, and I was concerned about, was that it's a player elimination is a key component to that game. But, you know, everybody seems to get knocked out about the same time.
The
game doesn't really, nobody ever gets knocked out in the first 5 minutes and the game lasts 10 minutes more.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, if the game lasts 15 minutes, around 10 minutes in is when people start to drop. And it usually goes pretty quick after that.
Yeah. Right.
Once somebody's gone, there's less targets. And,
sure.
You know, everybody that remains,
it's crazy from there,
goes pretty quick.
Yeah.
So I hope you check it out. It's our first Kickstarter that we've done.
I can tell you're kind of nervous about this, but I mean, this is exciting.
It's very exciting.
This is very exciting.
It's terrifying, but it's exciting.
Yeah, you are obviously terrified right now because this is all on your shoulders, but I'm thrilled for you. I'm so excited. We've been working to this point for more than a year now on the show here, talking about getting to this point, and now we're there. We're there. You are launching a Kickstarter for a game that you have designed. It's super exciting, and I really, hopefully everybody, come on. This is what we've been talking about. This is kind of the first big climax is when you sold Gunslinging Ramblers. This is like the number 2 great big moment here. Something we're doing this. We're making this happen. We are following through on our commitment to you guys. We are Jason is. I'm still a sucker and a slacker. You know, I'm not doing anything.
I'm just a little more cavalier than you are about this stuff.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do it.
But this is exciting. You are launching your own Kickstarter for your game that you designed. All of our listeners have been a part of this process from the beginning.
Yep.
They have been involved. They have seen it evolve from Snowball Fight into Water Balloon Washout and have experienced and heard about the entire process from beginning all the way up to this point. I don't want to say beginning to end because it's not the end yet. This is kind of just the second beginning of it. And it's really, really cool. It's very cool.
It's exciting. It's scary, but it's exciting.
Absolutely terrifying. If I were in your shoes, I'd be shaking right now.
But hey, we've got some really fun ideas for stretch goals.
Tell us about that stuff.
I wasn't going to tell people.
Okay,
yet,
don't tell us about that. We want to be surprised.
We have some fun ideas for stretch goals, though, and I really want to, you know, it's some really cool ideas to expand the game, add some varied play styles to it and stuff that, you know, as we get a little higher in the money, we're going to do that. So, and right now, while you're listening to this, I'm probably clicking refresh on my computer to see how it's doing.
Yeah.
So make my day and go out there and go ahead and back that. You know, I don't feel bad about shamelessly plugging this because I need people to back it. So, but it'll end before Gen Con. That was always the plan, was I really wanted it to be done before Gen Con.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So if you guys, if you can find us at Gen Con, find us, and you can play a copy of the game.
Yeah,
you're going to have it with you.
I'll certainly have a couple prototypes with me.
Yep.
For sure.
Right? $15, you can't beat that. That is cheap. That is lunch money, basically, for one day. Come on. Yep. You can afford that, people.
You can.
Come on!
And if you want to spend a little more, and you want to get a little extra action in the game, so we have 14 limited slots. There may be less than that by now, but we launched it with 14 limited slots at the $250 level, mm-hmm. Where you can actually get a kid between the ages of 5 to 12 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We're a little flexible with that, but you give us a picture. The artist is actually going to do a drawing of that kid in the style of the game, and they will actually be on a card twice, once on the dry side, once on the soak side. And then also we'll send you an art print of that.
That's awesome.
In addition to that, an art print of both, an 8x10 of both the soaked side and the dry side. So that'll be fun for some people who want to, like, you know, leave their mark on the game by getting their own kid right in the game.
You can have your kid in the game.
Right.
That is
forever
awesome.
Immortalized. And of course, that also comes with a copy of the game.
I would hope so.
Why would it not?
Yeah.
So
cool. Water Balloon Washout on Kickstarter right now. Check it out, everybody. Doggone it.
Yes.
Yes. Cool. Very exciting, Jason. I'm very happy for you. Excited for you.
Thanks. We'll, we'll have an update next time we record.
Yeah.
Not much of an update because we will not be very far into the process. We'll be recording, I think, the day after. I think we'll be recording the day after this launches.
Right.
So it's not like we're going to have a ton of information at that point.
Right. But we will keep you guys posted as much as we can.
Unless you guys want to fund it the first day. And then on the 9th when we record, we'll be like, woo!
Right. And then we can announce all the stretch goals. But,
right then.
But check it out on Kickstarter. Check out our website. You can find a link to the Kickstarter. You can follow Jason at J.A. Slingerland on Twitter, the website, buildinggamepodcast.com. All that stuff. Watch there for updates and for up-to-the-minute excitement.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So thank you, guys. Hey, let's talk about a mechanic, shall
okay.
we?
Okay, we should move on.
I've
sure,
got,
what you got?
I've got a mechanic. I was talking about King of Tokyo. King of Tokyo has custom dice, these D6s, that have different symbols on them for just how the game plays. And I won't go into detail on that, but that got me thinking about, I really enjoy games with custom dice.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, not just a game with like one side of one die has like a special thing on it. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, games that have like full-on custom dice. Another one I could think of is Catan Dice, is full-on custom. Viva Java Dice, it's on Kickstarter right now, already funded.
I think it'll be over by the time this episode posts, but
well, it's already funded, so
yeah,
doesn't
right.
really
either
matter.
Way Viva Java Dice,
so,
yeah,
TC Petty is an awesome guy.
Yep.
And Dice Hate Me Games are an awesome company, so it's cool they've got their own custom dice with that. And yeah, so custom dice.
Custom dice.
Custom
okay.
dice. I've also been working on a game design that involves custom dice.
Uh-oh.
Probably because I played King of Tokyo and I really enjoyed the custom dice. And I was like, what's a different way to do this resource system?
Yeah.
Let's use custom dice. So, okay. Issues. Cost prohibitive sometimes, right?
It can be expensive. Yeah, Quarriors is a wonderful example of that. I mean, the whole game is custom dice.
Yep.
And it's, I mean, it's not a terribly expensive game, but I think it's not terribly expensive because WizKids is a massive company with a lot of resources and can create, you know, make copies of that game in huge volumes to offset the cost.
Do you know how many dice come in that?
I don't know. It's a giant,
I was just thinking,
tin of dice.
Because Castle Dice, which I just got.
Yeah.
I actually picked it up at Origins. They were nice enough to give me a copy there.
Cool.
I haven't been able to play it yet, but I believe that has 64 custom dice in it.
Wow.
And I think that was a $50 game. For anyone else who backed that on Kickstarter, when you get that box, you're going to be like, this feels like a $50 game.
Yeah.
That box is heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big box and it's heavy and, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
So
little guys like us though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking this game I'm going to prototype. I thought I'll prototype it through GameCrafter just for the heck of it, you know, to try and get more experience doing that. The custom dice for it alone are going to cost me like $20.
Oof.
Yeah, and there's not that many custom dice. There's 22 custom dice, I think.
Okay.
So, So, yeah.
So, they're expensive. So, I mean, and you can just order regular old six-sided dice and then, like, have a reference sheet. If you roll a one, it means A. Right. If you roll a two,
it
means B.
It's not very
fun. But it's not as fun. It's not as exciting. Yeah. It's nice to be able to roll the dice and then see that. Oh, hey, look, it's the burst or it's the zombie or it's the whatever, you know?
Right.
It's really cool to have those icons. So, one alternative are those indented blank dice that you can put a sticker on.
Of course, that's what I'm getting from Gramcrafter. That's super expensive.
Oh, even that is that expensive. Okay.
And I actually got to talk to Grant Wilson and Michael Ritchie at Origins from Rather Dashing Games.
Yeah,
and I was talking to them about Dwarven Miner.
Yeah,
because that actually has the sticker dice.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Because he said it was funny in the prototype version, they had the real customized dice, like the engraved dice. And people kept getting confused and complaining because they'd be like, "What's okay? The symbol here on the engraved dice, of course, isn't as clear as the picture that's on there."
Oh, yeah.
So they would show them the other dice, and they'd be like, "Oh, I'd rather use those."
Really?
So, but
interesting.
In a more costly, what they did, but they did it to take care of the people that are buying the game, which I appreciate since I bought the game.
Well, sure.
They actually give you an extra sheet of stickers in case you screw it up or one of them gets damaged.
Nice.
Which is a really good idea. And the stickers are obviously one of the cheaper pieces.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
I mean, if you've got to put extra of something in, the stickers are probably one of your better bets.
Yeah.
But still, it's something else to think about. You know, that cost of those dice.
Mm-hmm.
But custom dice are fun. I mean, they're fun. They make the game feel... It doesn't just feel like you're rolling dice anymore, right? It doesn't just feel like you're rolling dice that get numbers. Like Stone Age. One of the things that I've never been a fan of Stone Age is you roll the dice, you have to do math to figure out what resources you get. I thought that was kind of lame.
And the game even kind of comes with kind of crappy wooden dice.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, gosh, it comes with those wooden dice and, like, that animal hide tin thing.
Yeah.
And ours smelled really bad. Yeah. I threw it away.
Rawhide little dice cup. And, I mean, I get why they do that, because it's supposed to be, like, all natural components. And, oh, you made this yourself. But it just kind of ends up being a little awkward and a little and just
stinky.
Dumb.
And literally, I threw it away. I sprayed it with sanitizer and the smell never went away, and so I threw it away.
Well, I still have ours. When we play, Christine doesn't like the cut dice cup, but I always use it just because it's there. I feel like I have to. Anyway.
That actually I feel like takes away from the theme, right?
But
I mean, a lot of games, Catan, I mean, I guess a lot of Euros just use standard dice, like regular Catanas.
Mm-hmm.
King of Tokyo is a really good use of it because, you know, it uses it to determine what you get in the game and what kind of points you earn for the actions you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
Castle Dice does the same type of thing where, like, it's dice drafting, like Warriors is,
okay.
Where you're drafting resources out of a pool.
Okay.
I kind of lost my train of thought on some other pros and cons about that.
So, I mean, it can add a little more character to your game. It can add, help make the mechanics match the theme a little bit more, you know?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, which is nice. And it's fun to have custom dice. It's something different. It's a way to make your game stand out a little bit. It is more expensive, though. Maybe it's not always the smartest choice. Gosh, you know, one thing I've talked about that game Dragon Strike that I have. It's a game where it's a dumb kids game, but
is
I
that
love
the electronic
it. Yeah,
dragon
with the electronic dragon that where it sweeps around with neck sweep in action. That's what it
right.
Yeah,
right.
It knocks the jewels off of your little pawns, and that has a die, and it's just a D6, right?
It could
easily just be a D6 because there's just numbered 1 through 6 on it. But it's not a regular D6. It's one of those larger indented dice, and you put stickers on it.
Right.
And the reason you do that is because four of the stickers are white, and two of the stickers are green. And when you roll one of the green ones, that's when you hit the button to make the dragon's neck spin around. You could have just done that by putting custom designs on the die, or you could have just simply painted the pips on a regular D6 on two sides green.
Right.
But, you know, this is just kind of, it's bigger, so if your little kids are playing, it might be a little easier for the kids to keep track of. But also, it gives you the chance to put actual, like, more detailed artwork on the face of that die.
Yep.
Which is kind of nice.
Yep. I think it definitely lends itself to the theme aspect of your game.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a worry that it can feel too kitschy? With certain themes?
Too kitschy.
You know what I mean, right? Like, it's just overdone, or...
Well, I mean, it's possible. You know, one of the things I'm thinking back to Quarriors, And you know, and this is actually something I'm thinking about, because last year Gen Con, we ordered custom dice, just kind of give away as a promo for the podcast, and we did the same this year. And we were trying to order another set for this year that was a different color.
Right.
But we couldn't find colors that we liked, and even then, when we found a color we liked, the contrast between the dye color and the paint color that would be inside the design was not good enough. It didn't make the logo stand out. And that's our problem with a lot of the Quarrier's dice, that they'll have a dark dye with like a silver paint in it, and it ends up kind of being hard to see and hard to read.
Right. I haven't looked at the Castle Dice one to know yet.
Mm-hmm.
At least the ones they showed on the site for the Kickstarter looked good.
Yeah.
They used all solid colors. But that definitely, you know, like Grant and Michael told me from Rather Dashing Games, they said people were saying, we're having trouble matching this to the picture.
That says, yeah.
So we went with an exact replica, which I think is a bonus to using the sticker dice, is you can have the exact picture.
Right. Right.
Which is good.
Yeah. Hmm. Custom dice. So,
I can't think of any other big negatives to custom dice. I mean, really, to me, the biggest negative is cost.
Yeah.
Other than that, custom dice, in my mind, are always going to be better than standard D6s or D whatevers you're using, simply because it adds more character to the game.
Yeah. And people like custom dice, you know?
They do.
Yeah. They're fun. Custom dice are fun.
They are.
Yeah. So, yeah. So our kind of feeling on this is that positive is it adds a little more fun, a little more character, a little more excitement to the game, kind of makes it stand out a little bit. Con, it's kind of expensive, and you got to be real careful with what kind of a design you put on the face of those dice.
Right.
That it doesn't get so detailed that it loses, or you know, you lose the detail of it because you're trying to be too detailed with it. You got to be real simple shapes and stuff.
And I think if you're going to use a lot of dice,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be looking at a big box game.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the cost is just not going to be cost effective.
It's not worth it, yeah.
And I remember Chevy Dodd talking about his game, I think Hedeby it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 6 custom laser cut dice in it that he got from Battlejack.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that seems more manageable in a smaller game. And I don't know how big Hedeby is. I don't think it's a big box game, though. I don't think it is at all. I think it's mostly just cards in those dice, but I could be wrong. I could have that confused with another game of his. That I think works, but I think if you know, like this game I'm trying to prototype that I want to pitch, I mean, 22 custom dice,
it's a lot.
I'm going to make it sure that it's a big board and there's a lot of other junk in there too. Yeah. You know?
to make it worth the cost.
Last I counted, I've got 280 chipboard chips.
Oh, yeah.
So,
wow.
Well, they're cardstock shards, is what I'm going to order from GameCrafter. But unfortunately, this will not be ready before Gen Con. But,
well, that's too bad.
But yeah,
it's okay. You'll have enough other stuff.
Might have it at Grand Con, though. There's a chance for that.
Okay,
so,
cool.
So if you come to Grand Con, which you can go find out about at grand-con.com,
ooh.
So you should definitely check that out.
Plug there.
Plug there. Well, hey, we love Grand Con.
No,
we're
going to
be
guys.
There. We're going to be hanging out.
We sure are. Yeah.
I don't really have anything else to say about custom dice. Okay. I do want to give a shout out to Origins. I don't know the guy's last name. First name is Jim. Super nice guy. He's a friend of Greg from Hattrix. And he has a game. I did not get to see the game, which really bummed me out because I really wanted to play the game. He had a prototype there. I was reminded of it because you mentioned the Dragon electronic game, right?
Yeah.
And we pretty much firmly said there's really no good way to include electronics without it feeling kind of,
gimmicky.
Yeah, kind of gimmicky, yeah, right?
Right.
He did it.
Oh, really?
So he has a game about lighthouses, right? There are 4 lighthouses in the game. And there are boats, and you're trying to get the boats to get into the harbor, right? And there are 2 lighthouse keepers. And whatever lighthouse the lighthouse keeper is in, it lights up the LED light at the top of the lighthouse.
Okay.
And you physically move the keepers, because unless that lighthouse is lit, you can't move to the next section of the board, right? Hmm. You're trying to get your boats into the harbor safely. And if it's not lit, you can't get in. So I was thinking about this, like it adds a real good functional level to the game because there's no like, wait, which lighthouse is the keeper in? Like the light's on, right? Mm. I mean, boom, there it is. You can't miss it.
That's cool.
You know, when you physically move it, there's no, oh, I forgot to move it. I mean, because the light turns on, you know what I mean? So I feel like that's not gimmicky. Like I really feel like that fits with the theme.
Well, I didn't play the game, so it's tough for me to say.
Well, I didn't play the game either, but.
But you saw it in action at least.
Listen, yeah. I mean, you know, listening to him talk about how it works, it just makes sense to me. So I thought that sounded really awesome.
Yeah, right on. Well, that's cool.
Then a game publisher's out there looking for a game with real lighthouses.
With real light-up lighthouses.
Call the guy Jim.
Call Jim. you know, Jim.
If you're interested in it, send me a message. I'll call Greg.
We'll find out who Jim's last name is. Yeah, all right. Right on.
But no, it sounds pretty cool.
Okay,
so,
cool. Excellent.
That was it. I just wanted to bring that up because...
Okay.
Because, yeah. And also, I just say hey to some... I neglected to mention some of the people I got to meet at Origins.
Sure, do it.
I got to meet, for the first time, Chris Kopak, who I believe is Kopax on Twitter. Super nice dude. Got to meet him. Got to meet Eric from Games and Grub, the review site.
Right on.
He's a super nice guy. They both got to, they both played Water Balloon Washout for me and gave me some feedback on it.
Cool.
Got to hang out with Chris Zinsley again, which, from Cardboard Edison. Those guys are great. Just Chris was there. Suzanne couldn't make it, but, I finally got to meet Jay Treat in person.
Oh, cool.
Super nice guy. He came with Chris actually. Yeah, and I'm sure I got to talk to all the Dice Hate Me people. I met TC Petty in person finally. Got to hang out with Jason Katarski a little bit and Chris Kirkman, and we had some dinner at Michael Lean Barbecue. It was good times. So haven't been there. My wife hates that place.
Why does she hate that place?
She doesn't hate the place. She likes the food. But I don't know, there's something about the whole process she's not a fan of. And now that we have the kid, it's kind of a pain. It's like one person can go.
Right, I can see that. Yeah.
So we just never go. So I was pretty excited.
Random.
So I got to meet some awesome guys though from there, and so
cool,
good times.
Excellent.
All right, hey, why don't you pitch a game for us? Shall you?
Yeah, all right, I can do that. Shall. You know, this is one that I've kind of been scratching my head about for a little while. I tweeted about it when I first came up with the idea because I was really excited about the idea at first, and then I made a quick and dirty prototype to try it, and it just kind of ended up being a little just too simple. So, right. It's called Death of a Salesman, the board game.
Which sounds not simple. No. If I was going to peg that as a board game.
Well, so see what it was is I was, I had just ordered my Frankenstein's Legacy prototype, and I was poking around the GameCraft website, just looking at all the different components that they had. And they, man, they've got a ton of minis on there, a ton of miniatures. And some of the stuff they have on there, it's like they have miniatures of just like guys in suits.
Nice.
You know, and women in dresses.
Like normal clothes?
Yeah, like, you know, like kind of like, you know, 50s, 60s era normal clothes.
Okay. Yeah.
You know? But I thought, man, I wonder if there's anything I could do with those. That seems like that would be really kind of fun to come up with.
Yeah.
And they also had a really wicked Grim Reaper mini.
Right. That does not surprise me.
Yeah. Well, actually, there were several of them. There's one in particular that I really liked, but there's a bunch of them. So I was thinking, man, I wonder if there's any way I could make a game with minis. With these, like, these men and women dressed up nicely in business attire and the Grim Reaper.
Nice.
You know? And so, Death of a Salesman. Here's the idea, okay? I was trying to go back to Damsels in Distress, because one thing that I really always liked a lot about Damsels in Distress was the kind of the hand management. And just to recap from that, for anybody who doesn't recall... each player of that game had a 7-card deck that they're playing with, and you only have 7 cards, okay? And they're move cards. So so on your turn, you draw the top 3 cards. You draw 4 cards to your hand, and you have to play 3 of them on your turn. Okay, and so it might be a +3, a +2, and a -1, and you also have a 0 in your hand. So you decide which of 3 of those 4 that you have to play to take actions on that turn.
Right.
So those 3 that you just played go to your discard pile. You have 1 card left, and then you draw the next 3 from your deck. Okay, and now you have 4 more cards in your hand, and you have to pick 3 of those to play.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you play those again when the next turn comes around. You play those 3. Now the first 3 cards that you played in your discard pile, those go back, and you pick them up. And so you're basically kind of rotating through these 7 cards that you're playing, and it's about. Kind of, it's not just about making decision right now, but it's about, you know, what card do I want to hold for the next turn? What do I have already sitting down there that's already been spent that I might need on the next turn? So it's not just about this hand, but it's about kind of strategizing and making things available for your next hand.
Right.
All right. And then meanwhile, the other 4 players are doing the same thing, and you're not sure about what they're going to do, what kind of stuff they're going to have available to them. So that's kind of the core strategy of Damsels in Distress.
Right.
And I really liked the way that played, and I thought, well, let me see if I can fit that into Death of a Salesman. So I created a kind of a grid, let's think of it as a T-shaped board, okay?
Okay.
And there's the horizontal, the top of the T, and that is the kind of the good and evil line of the salesman's life.
Okay.
And then the vertical, the upright of the T, is the path of the Grim Reaper.
Okay.
Okay. So this is a two-player game, and each player is playing these cards to influence the salesman. All right, one player is good, one player is evil, and the good player is trying to play cards to playing good deeds to bring to move the salesman mini toward the good side of the track. Meanwhile, the evil player is trying to play evil deeds in the life of the salesman to try and bring him to the evil side of the track. But every now and then, like every seventh card, they have to play the Grim Reaper card. And when you play the Grim Reaper card, you advance the Grim Reaper mini one space.
Okay.
Up the vertical of the right. T. Okay?
Coming for him.
He's coming for him. And in actuality of the game, you're not going to have one T. You're going to have like eight T's stacked on top of each other.
Right.
Okay. So we have a whole bunch of horizontals, but only one vertical. So the Grim Reaper is always traveling up that vertical line, but there are eight horizontals for the lives of these eight different people. And when the Grim Reaper gets to that guy, he dies. He's right, dead.
When he gets to his line.
Right. When the Grim Reaper gets to his lifeline, his good and evil line, then that guy dies. And whichever side of the line he's on, that person gets a point for it.
So if he's on the good side, good deeds, bad side, bad deeds.
Right, that's the idea. Okay. And the Grim Reaper keeps on going. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to influence the lives of all eight of these people out here and juggle that. But of course, you know, death is always coming. Death is always coming. And it worked. It worked fine. But it worked way too simple. There was nothing fun or exciting about it at all. It was just, yep, I'm playing that card and I'm moving that guy there and the Grim Reaper, oh, and he's dead. Oh, well. And it was just nothing fun. There's nothing exciting. There was no, you know, no zazz, you know?
Game needs zazz, man.
Yeah. It was just too simple of a game. And so I kind of gave up on it for a little while. But I still really like that theme. I really like that idea that, you know, that, Maybe two players isn't the way to go, but that idea of one person is the angel and the other is the demon, and they're trying to influence the lives of these innocents out on the table, and that's tracked by a miniature on a track of some kind, but time is always moving forward. The coming of death is always coming for them, you know?
Right.
And that was always, I really felt like kind of a fun concept. So, that was the original idea. What do you got? Can you help me come up with some other ways to approach this?
Right. So you want to, cause like, I guess, so that I'm thinking about how many salesman minis are out there in a standard game?
I think there were eight, four men and four women on the GameCrafter website. So I was just thinking in terms of eight.
Okay, cool.
Total. That, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be.
And so it's eight different tracks across, right?
Yeah.
With one straight line up through the middle. Okay. I was just trying to think about, first of all, like, what's your strategy for that, right? It almost seems like it would be really easy to just split the difference. Like, all right, well, Jason's going to get these three. I'm going to get these three. We'll fight over these last two, right?
Yeah.
Also, the bad thing about eight is you could actually have a tie.
Yeah.
So what if it wasn't just based on, all right, he's on the left side, so he's on the good side, or he's on the right side, so he's on the bad side. It's each dot, each square is a point from, like, zero in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be fun if they were in the center, right? Like, so obviously you've got your path straight up and then there's the T cross, right?
Yeah.
So that center point, what if that's like limbo or something? So if you get hit there, something special happens, right?
Okay.
Maybe if you
purgatory.
Right. Or maybe you get, maybe they go into purgatory and they're off to the side and there's ways to get them back.
Okay.
What I was going to say was like, if there's, we'll say, five slots on each side, right? So 10 total, zero in the middle, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, same for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I have him in the five spot, I'm going to get 5 points for that guy.
Okay.
Not just, oh, he goes in my pile. I'm going to get 5 points for it. Because that then, like, because otherwise, here's what I would see happening. Like, I play a card that moves my guy out three. Mm-hmm. I'm three squares out on my, you're like, I'm not going to get there in time. Screw it. I'll just go to the next one.
Yeah.
But this way, I move mine out to 5, and you're like, well, crap, he's going to get 5 points. Even if I can't win that soul, I want to try and push him back down to maybe 3 or 2, so he gets less points, right?
Okay, sure.
And then having a way where you can... maybe the Grim Reaper moves up kind of fast. So if you could get people in the middle, maybe that'd be really hard to do, I don't know. But if there are ways to push them into limbo, and then they... respawn back directly behind the Grim Reaper. So when he gets to the top, he turns around and he comes back down the chain again and picks up those people again. It's like they get a second chance or something.
Reincarnated or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, that might be a fun thing to do. Like, you score points. So, like, if I get this soul for 5, he's 5 points, I get those 5 points. But there are, like, reincarnate cards that I can play, and I could take one of those people... And just because maybe you don't get to keep the miniature, you just keep the thing. So I play a reincarnate card. Now he's going to come back. You still keep your 5 points, but I've got a chance to try and score more points. And those could be built right into the Grim Reaper's deck. You know, there's like 3 reincarnate cards you shuffled into the deck when you flip over the Grim Reaper card every so many turns, right? And now he's going to move up 1.
Yeah.
That would also allow you to have extra actions for the Reaper, whether it's move up 1 or whether it's, you know, maybe he's going to, move 5 squares towards the next, like towards the person who's the farthest evil or the farthest good. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he might skip 1, you know what I mean? Like skip all until you get to this. So that might actually mean he moves to the top. So maybe he is just moving back and forth up and down this chain. Does that make sense?
I think so.
So whatever he's going a direction, he goes that way till he hits the last tee. Then he turns around and he starts going back. So you could actually have cards where he would skip over 1, like skip the next tee. So he immediately jumps to the one after that. So those people, like, you've been planning, like, all right, I got it. I got my guy at 5. It's good. And the person's like, oh, I can't stop you. And then, boom, the Reaper skips it. And now the opponent has time to try and nudge it back. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Just add a little more complexity without needing to add. I mean, basically, you've got a deck of cards for the Reaper. You've got your deck of cards. And then you've got some scoring tokens.
What if, because I like these ideas of these different card powers. What if, okay, because you know I like dual purpose cards, right?
You do.
I do, okay. What if, so we have one deck of cards, right? And everybody's drawing from the same deck, and there are random Reaper cards mixed in there. Every time so you draw a Reaper card, you have to play it right away and move the Reaper, regardless of what happens. Okay. On your turn, you have a deck of 5 cards, and you can play 2 cards on your hand. And every card either has 2 options. Either you can use it to move your salesman up or down his track, or you can put the card face down at the end of his track to cue it up. And so when the Green Reaper reaches his track, he reaches that salesman's track, then any cards that are queued up, whatever side he's on, well, first thought is, okay, well, that's the side he's on. Then you flip over any cards that are queued and use the death action on them. And that death action might say, move the salesman another 2 spaces towards you. It might say, it might be something like, you know, defibrillator, he's revived at the hospital, haha, death didn't take him today.
Right, so then it would just skip over him.
It might be the Grim Reaper takes pity and skips the next person in line. It could be all these different effects that happen afterwards.
Right. I like that.
That could work.
Then there's
really well.
Some hidden stuff going on too.
Yeah, right. And then you're choosing, do I move the guy now or do I hedge my bets and cue put that card down later in the hopes that something can happen.
Right.
Yeah, that could work really well.
That could be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Another thought would be, were all these people in suits the same?
No, each one was a different sculpt.
So you could have, like, this does this for this one, but it does this extra for this one.
Oh, if it's a man, it's this, or if it's a woman, it's that. Or if he's got his hand in his pocket, it's this.
Exactly, you just have a picture of the miniature, basically.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea.
So you could even have that for, like, a special death action, right? Like... If it happens to be this person, then, and you're like, oh, I got to get that card. I want to put that on that death action because that's going to be awesome. So,
yeah, if he's wearing a blue suit, this. If he's wearing a brown suit, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. I like that a lot better.
So just to give some more variation, and you get tons of use out of the one deck of cards.
Yeah. And yeah. And of course, if you run out of cards, you just discard and reshuffle the reshuffle the discard pile.
Yeah.
And that gives it, that way you don't have to have enough death cards in there for him to make a full circuit on the track. In fact, he might be going bouncing back and forth the whole time.
Yep.
Yeah, and you just reshuffle him.
Because you use the death cards to redirect him
right
to where you want him to go.
Yeah, and, right. And one of the cards that you could lay it face down might say death turns direction.
Right.
Yeah.
Death turns direction. So maybe have like...
Death takes a holiday.
Right.
Isn't that a movie or something?
It could be. It sounds like it. You could have like three squares.
Mm-hmm.
Death starts at one end. Three squares, T. Three squares, T.
Yeah.
Three squares. And then at the end... three more again. So once he passes that last one, you're going to get a bit of a break.
I think so, yeah.
Right.
I think you'd have to do it that way.
So then he gets to the end, he turns back around,
mm-hmm.
he starts coming back. I like that a lot.
I like this a lot better now. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm going to have to prototype this. Because I think it's a super fun concept.
And you
concept.
Can just order the pieces off Game Crafter.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. I've got a little dice bag that's just full of Game Crafter components.
Nice.
Cool. All right. I like that. Thank you. Yeah.
Cool.
Very happy with that, with the progress on that.
I would love to try that game.
I appreciate it. Okay, cool.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Death of a Salesman, the board game.
I wonder if I could actually use that name.
I'm not sure you can't.
Well, I'm going to have to, gosh, it's such a good name though, isn't it?
Death of the Salesmen's.
Death of the Salesmen.
Yeah.
Salespersons.
Sales. That, you know, I'm all for being politically correct, but it just doesn't have the same ring to it. Because the original thing was called Death of a Salesman. So, yeah. Like...
I know. Probably couldn't call it Death of a Salesman, the board game.
Probably not.
God, it's such a good name, though.
It is, though.
It's such a good name. Huh.
Though you might lose some people because they're going to be like, Willy Loman does not sound like fun.
It would all depend on the artwork.
Hey, I have an idea that involves us moving on.
Okay, let's do that.
All right. Hey, we have a few comments we should read.
Yeah, we have a couple here. Let's see. The first one is from Gray Dietrich. Dietrich? Not sure how to pronounce that. And he says, here's an interesting application for the OSC system, the offset card system that we've talked about that I'm
trying to work on. Hey, all right, Gray. Way to bring that up. That's cool.
He says, have either of you guys played Memoir 44 or a similar war game?
Heard a ton about it, not played it.
I've never even heard of it. I don't know anything.
Oh,
about
I've heard
it.
Of it. I just haven't played it.
He says there's a pile of command cards that get drawn to direct various forces in a World War II setting. The battle is broken up into a left flank, center, and right flank. Many of the command cards drawn by the commander have two pieces of data on them, which sections to activate units in, usually left, center, right, left, or right, all. I messed that up. Anyway. And how many units to activate, usually one, two, three, or all. Not owning a copy of such a war game like Memoir 44 myself, I can't really experiment. I do think that this could give the commander another layer of something interesting to do. Sometimes the random draws of inefficient cards can leave an otherwise capable army with little intelligent choices to do. I'm sure a system of combining pairs of cards to make individual orders could give the commander the feeling of making lemonade out of a lemony card draw. Or a feeling of great power when they can pair excellent cards into excellent combinations. One could even argue that the decision-making over how to combine cards could be seen as war room deliberation simulation. The only drawback, there's a lot going on already in the game.
But
that's an interesting
idea.
I think
you could apply that to a slightly simpler game.
I think you could.
Those three flanks are mm-hmm. definitely appealing for that.
Right.
For sure. Because your point cards
mm-hmm.
could instead be like left five, right five, meaning like, you know, that's the power of the ability,
yeah.
and you have to use that with the left flank.
Yeah.
And then you would pair that with
how many units you're gonna mobilize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That is, yeah.
Thanks for that tip, man. That's good.
That's great. I'm telling you, the OSC, man, it's gold. It's pure gold.
Well, hey, that is awesome that a listener did that. So
yeah. Thank you, sir. Next one we have is from Roger Hicks. Roger says, just listened to this episode. He was talking about our episode 54, Miniature Ideas in Sandy Boxes. Just listened to this episode. First, let me say that I really love your show. Oh, thank you. About 2 months ago, I started planning my own podcast or blog, podcast/blog, on game design and started hunting around for others who might already be doing the same thing. And that's when I stumbled across your podcast. I subscribed and immediately listened to all the back episodes available in iTunes. And he asks us why we only have the most recent 10 on iTunes.
So, that's just how it works. It slows down your data feed if you have more than that, or so I'm told by super smart podcasting gurus, by more than one, actually, who've told me that. So to try and combat that, if you're willing to listen online, or there are some sneaky ways to download it, I think, and still put it on your iDevice or your Android device, we have an episode list. It's on the website. It's called Episode List. You go to that. Every episode is hotlinked right there. You just click it and then you hit play. So it's really easy interface. I know some other people who've been working from the in through our library from the start, and have been using that as well, and they said that they love it. So
buildinggamepodcast.com, you can listen online. Right there.
It's not always completely up to date. I think I'm a couple episodes behind right now, but for the purposes of people, you know, the idea is that it's the back episodes, the ones you can't get on iTunes. So we always try and keep it up to date. Sometimes we're a little behind, but it always is going to have the last ones that aren't on iTunes for sure. So
absolutely.
So feel free, Mr. Hicks, to go back to the beginning and and do it up. So
yeah. And he continues. He says, while I liked the mechanic discussion on miniatures, I think part of your difficulty in coming up with ideas is that, in my opinion, miniatures aren't really a game mechanic. They're a component. Yeah, we kind of had that discussion.
We do that sometimes.
We do, yeah.
You'll get used to it. Yeah. Don't worry.
While your last idea of matching up minis to see who hits and who misses is a good one, it's not really a minis mechanic. Sure, it can be done with minis, but it can also be done with cards.
Yes.
Yeah, he's right.
And we were trying to find a way to do it with minis, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We were stretching a bit.
A little bit, yeah. We do that. Certain mechanics can be implemented better with certain components, but I think the two concepts are separate. Yeah, he's probably right about
that. Yeah. Oh, he's totally right about that. And sometimes, like we've said, we like to talk about a feature or a component. We call it the Mechanic of the Week because that's what the segment's called. But we do stray from that many times.
But we kind of just, I mean, we want to try and come up with new ideas, new ways to use things if ever we can.
Right. For instance, the episode where we talked about how art influences mechanics and playstyle. So, yes.
Last thing he says here, I enjoy the sandbox showdown pitch, but couldn't visualize how it would all come together to make a good game until I listened to the follow-up playtest. Wow, I think you've got a hit on your hands. I like the expandable angle and the ability to give each deck its own theme. The gameplay seems fun while presenting the player with a series of interesting decisions. Jason, if you've got a few minutes free, I'd love to interview you about this game on my blog or podcast. Let me know. I would, of course, also love an interview with Rob as well.
It doesn't say that.
He does say that. It says, I would, of course, love an interview with Rob as well. You both have so many great ideas.
Oh, it does say that. The way you said it, I really thought you were adding that in.
No, but yeah. No, I mean, he pretty much says, Jason, you're so much cooler than Rob.
Well, I mean,
you're obviously a lot more successful so far than I am, so I don't blame him for that.
Again, I'm just more cavalier.
You are. Yeah.
You
throw caution to the wind.
Are way more prepared going into Gen Con than I am this year. So,
well, we'll see about that.
I mean, you have two games. I have one.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I just did launch Kickstarter, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Roger, if I haven't already contacted you, I will. I would love to talk to you about the game.
Certainly.
If you're going to be at Gen Con, for sure, I'd love to have you play the game, because I will definitely have a prototype there one way or another. Should be from the Game Crafter.
Good stuff.
And I appreciate to hear Roger say that he didn't understand the game until he listened to the playtest.
Yeah, yeah.
And that helped, because that means that the playtests are doing something. You know, when we've heard from more people, and I'm surprised that, you know, they're like, these playtests are really helpful. Because I've also heard from some people, I skipped the playtest because I really don't know what's going on. And I completely valid
concern. Totally understand that.
Because that was something we were terrified about. But then a lot of people started responding and saying, we really like this. So. Yeah.
So we're going to keep doing that stuff.
Yeah, we're going to keep doing it for sure. And it's always nice to hear that positive feedback that it helped somebody understand one of our pitches. So, and thank you for the kind words about the game. I super appreciate that. And like I said, I will be in touch for sure.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, that's going to wrap us up for tonight. So thank you once again, one and all, for listening to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can leave comments on our website at buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JA Slingerland. I am at poorly_ design. You can like us on Facebook. Remember, if we get to 100 likes, we will give you an extra special bonus gift. Well, it used to be Snowball Fight, but now that Jason has launched his Kickstarter for Water Balloon Washout, we're going to have to come up with something else.
Yes, it'll be a different free game from one of us. We haven't talked about which one yet. We actually just, Rob said that, and I was like, oh yeah.
To be determined.
To be determined, but we promise it will be awesome.
Yes, so, indeed.
So get us there.
Mm-hmm. You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That we would really, really appreciate that. That would mean so, so much to us. And have I forgotten anything?
I think you hit it all.
Okie dokie. Then that will wrap us up. And I already said that. And
good night.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've been drinking a little whiskey tonight, so I'm a little off my game.
And good night.
Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2,
1, 2, 3.